You are listening to episode 25 of the FitzPro podcast, and this is part two of how to be good at programming. In part one, we went over the fact that you need to understand anatomy and physiology, that you need to understand the planes of movement and motion before you can be good at programming. I dive into why you need to be good at those things and why you need to understand them. So if you missed that, make sure to go back and listen to part number one. But today in part number two, we really dive into the skeleton of a program, how to make that, what needs to be included, what you need to consider with exercise selection and set and rep schemes and things of that sort. So if you are a trainer who wants to get better at programming and simplify how to be good at programming, today's episode is going to be for you. So without further ado, let's dive in. The FitzPro podcast is your no BS approach to seeking out truth in the world that is online health and fitness. You'll see through the lens of the trainer, the trainee, and the entrepreneur. I'm your host, Annie Miller, certified strength and conditioning specialist, entrepreneur, lover of sleep, lattes, and dinosaurs, AKA not your average FitzPro. And my aim is to help you grow your mind, body, and business through knowledge and authenticity so that you too can become a FitzPro. Oh, you guys, I am excited to do this episode for you. I won't say that I'm the best at simplifying programming. My brain gets it and I do it all the time, but to break that down into a system that is teachable, I'm not an expert at that yet, but I'm going to do my best today to try and simplify writing strength training programs for building strength, power, and increasing mobility so that you can up your programming game and simplify that process for yourself. That's the goal. We'll see how it goes. So I, for one, understand how hard and overwhelming it can be to write programs. So for those of you that feel like you don't know where to start or you can't comprehend how easy it is for other trainers, remember that we all likely felt that way at some point. So when you see a trainer that is really, really good at writing programs and it seems easy for them, remember that they had to start at day one too. At some point, we all had that first program. We all felt like there were 3 million exercises and 200,000 rep schemes, and somehow we were supposed to know which 5 of the 3 million exercises would work and what rep schemes would get us where we wanted to be. So I just want you to know that while I consider myself an expert and still learning, so expert to me doesn't mean I've reached some pinnacle. It just means I'm really freaking good at it, and I still have more to learn. So even though I consider myself an expert at writing programs and I love doing it now, there was once a time when I stood in my professor's office with a blank piece of paper and nothing but questions because I could not for the life of me start my program design. I said to him, I just want an equation. A times B gives you C for your results. Right? Like, I want to get strong. This is the program you follow. I want to increase power. This is the program you follow. I want to increase endurance. This is the program you follow. I'm writing a strength training program for a runner. This is the program you follow. I wanted a one size fits all, basically, approach for certain areas of training stimulus. And he said what he thought would be helpful, but just solidified my point of struggle, and that is that he could ask 25 of us in the class to write a program that would improve his back squat or vertical jump or whatever, and all 25 of us would write him completely different programs, but that all those programs would get him the same result. Yeah, not helpful. That was not helpful for me. It was supposed to be freeing to me, but it wasn't. Like I said, it just confirmed to me that there were 3 million combinations and I was stuck in choosing the right one. But fam, there isn't a right one. There is, however, some basics that can help ground you when starting out. And that's what I'm sharing with you today. We'll jump into your program skeleton, exercise selection, and some info on sets and reps. I hope to provide a framework in the very least so you have something to focus on besides a blank slate and endless options because I know how that feels and it can be paralyzing when you don't know where to start. To keep it simple, this episode is for a strength training program, not CrossFit, where you're focusing on specific energy systems on a day-to-day basis, or you should be anyway, right? Like CrossFit isn't just trying to get strong. They're increasing power. They're increasing skills. They're focusing on a lot of different areas. That is not what this is for. This is for those of you who are looking to improve things like strength, hypertrophy, power, and mobility, either for yourself as a trainer or for your clients, maybe even correct imbalances and things like that. So if that's you, if that's your style of training, then this is going to be for you. First up, you have your program skeleton, right? This is your plug and chug components. Nearly every workout will have these things included. You just need to put the appropriate exercises in place. So your components are a warm-up. Get the heart rate up, get the body prepped to move, right? We've been sedentary all day, most likely, and we need to prepare our bodies to enter a more active state. Movement prep, for me, comes after the warm-up. This might be part of your warm-up as well. This is mobility and nervous system prep. If I'm squatting, then I'll do banded speed squats or Cossack squats or deep squat with T-spine rotations. If I'm benching, maybe I do some yoga push-ups and band pulls, retractions, and get my scapula set, things of that sort to help prep my body and nervous system for the main movements of that day. Core and breath work can also go in the warm-up or the movement prep areas as well. This is typically where I add things like planks, pal-off presses, dead bugs, or bear crawl variations, and that, of course, all depends on the client and the program goal, right? If you're Olympic lifting, this would include some PVC pipe mimics of the front rack position, mobilizing your T-spine, overhead squats, you know, speed split jerks, whatever needs to be mobilized and prepped before adding a load into the mix. So that's what happens in movement prep. Then after movement prep, for me, again, you could lump that all into a warm-up if you wanted to. The main lift comes next, or the main purpose of that training day comes next. This is your big compound movement or movements, so squats, deadlifts, presses, or variations of all of those main compound lifts. We'll get into sets and reps a little bit later. If you have a power movement, it's important to note, like plyos or Olympic lifts, that needs to go before your strength or other compound movements or single joint movements. And that's simply because of the progression and demand on the nervous system from power movements. Remember that strength is the basis of power, right? So strength is just how much force you can produce over a certain distance, right? How much load can you move over a certain distance? Power enters the aspect of time. How fast can you move that load a given distance, right? So power has a higher demand on your CNS, your central nervous system. So that comes first, then your strength work, as that still has a high demand on your CNS, but less than that of power movements, generally speaking. So power movements first, then your strength, which would be your main compound movements. After your strength or main lift, whether it's strength or not, comes your accessory work, or as I've heard it called, your necessity work, because the idea behind accessory work is that it builds muscle, improves imbalances that you have, and serves the purpose of improving your larger compound lifts, getting you stronger, getting you more mobile, all of these things. You'd plug these in either in supersets or single sets. Generally, you want to go from compound to single joint throughout your workout. So power, strength, and then hypertrophy or endurance or strength continued. And that is from compound to single joint lifts. So compound earlier on, as they have a higher CNS demand and metabolic demand on the body, and then you end or taper off with single joint exercises, which have more isolation to specific muscle groups and less overall demand on the body. I hope that that's making sense. You can end with either some mobility cardio, some kind of cool down of your choice. Hopefully, if you're doing cardio, it's purposeful and based on heart rate and training a specific energy system. That is something I went over in two coaching calls inside Built by Annie, was energy systems development and heart rate training and how we can make our cardio more purposeful. So maybe I'll do a podcast on that sometime. All of that depends on your time, goals, and everything that you are trying to accomplish with this program. How long the program or how long the workout is, do you have a cool down? Are you working on mobility or not? Is there cardio included? Right, we have to consider all these things. So overall though, for your skeleton of your program, you have the warm up, the movement prep, a power lift if that needs to be included or not, your main lift, which is gonna be some kind of strength compound work, then comes your compound accessory, and then single joint accessory. And if you want to end with a cool down or cardio or whatever you need, that's going to be last. So that is your skeleton for now. Then we have sets and reps and exercise selection, right? So that's what we're going to dive into next. Let's tackle exercise selection first. You need to understand movements in categories before we go plucking from the exercise tree. So by categories, I mean you have squats or knee-dominant movements. You have hinges, hip-dominant movements. You have vertical pushes and vertical pulls, so strict press, push press, pull-ups, lat pull-downs, high pulls, and then you have horizontal pushes and pulls, so bench press, push-ups, bent-over rows, seated rows, inverted rows. And then we have carries. You can do that overhead, single-arm, offset, normal farmer carries. And then we have core work, which can be isometric, anti-rotational, and rotational both. And then within all of those categories, like say your squat, hinge, pushes, and pulls, we have single limb work, right? But those are the basics. And if you grasp that categorization and know how to tell what category an exercise falls into, you should have a better idea of how to focus a program while keeping it balanced, both from a workout-to-workout basis and when you look at your weekly layout of how many squats do you have, how many hinging patterns do you have, how many times did you carry, how are you progressing all of those things. If you can focus on these five categories, there's more than five if you look at vertical pulls and pushes and horizontal pulls and pushes, but if you can look at these categories and stay within them, then you're going to have a simple program and it's going to be much easier to progress and program with. So you've got your skeleton and categories to pull from for exercise selection. The actual exercises you choose will be based on the goals of the program and the needs of the trainee, whether that's yourself or a client or a group of people. From a bodybuilding standpoint, you could do isolated programming. So you're doing splits, you know, chest and back, shoulders, knee dominant, leg day where you go after the quads, posterior chain dominant, leg day where you're going after the glutes and hamstrings. But no matter what, the same skeleton can still apply here. So in that case, you would have a squat day, a deadlift day, a bench day, and an overhead pressing day with accessory that fell into appropriate categories, as I mentioned before. And on the subject of exercise selection and sets and reps, you need to consider how many days a week the athlete is lifting. And this is kind of a great segue between the two topics. People have asked me before, how many exercises do you program per day? Like there's a one-size-fits-all answer to that. First off, there are three things you need to consider when choosing exercise selection and set and rep schemes. So we're kind of meshing these two subjects right now. And those are your weekly volume, the goals of the program, and the training age of the athlete. Again, weekly volume, goals of the program, and training age of the athlete. So now we're gonna dive into each of those. It's a mistake for a trainer to look at a program workout by workout alone. You need to look at weekly volume, both in total stress to the body and isolated stress to certain areas. For instance, I could have an athlete squat 3 days a week and another athlete squat one day per week and do reverse lunges another day as their main lift, and they could totally have the same weekly volume for training legs. Remember, volume is just your sets times your reps. How many total reps do you complete or does your athlete complete for a given exercise or area of the body? So if an athlete is doing German volume training, they likely have more volume in one workout than an athlete training a body part multiple times a week. And I hope that's not going over your head. That basically is just saying that an athlete who is doing German volume training might complete up to 500 reps in one exercise for a given body part, say legs or upper body, whatever. So in one workout, they could complete up to 500 reps, where another athlete training legs 3 days a week may not even get up to all 500 of those reps, right? So one athlete could be doing more volume in one workout than an athlete is getting in an entire week. I hope that that is making sense. That's all just to say that you need to keep an eye on weekly volume and time under tension for the whole body and isolated areas both. Have the big picture in mind versus just making five individual workouts that aren't cohesive. Number two, under exercise selection and set and rep schemes is a bit obvious, but you need to make your decisions around the goal of the program. Is the athlete recovering from an injury? Are they working to improve mobility, put on muscle size, increase power output? All of these goals would yield a different exercise selection as well as a different set and rep scheme from one another, right? So an athlete who is strictly trying to get strong might only have four or five total exercises in a program from me, but an athlete working to improve imbalances or mobility could have up to 8 to 10. Both workouts, however, will only take 45 minutes to an hour. And that's simply just because I don't believe in long-ass workouts and they get boring and ain't nobody got time for that. So I really try to get my people out within an hour and focus on the point of the program versus getting 8 exercises in everybody's program. There's literally no point to that. So as a trainer, make sure that you're not putting your programming in a box. Like, it's bad to program if the program goes over 4 exercises. Like, it must not be efficient if you're doing more than 4 exercises. Or if it doesn't have 8 plus exercises, then you're not doing enough. No, not true. Is the program efficient? Does it serve the purpose of the goal of the program? Did you consider your weekly volume? Great. If you did those things, you're freaking killing it. And lastly, within exercise selection and set and rep schemes, you need to consider the athlete's training age. This is something that I don't think is talked about enough. Now, if you don't know what that means, it simply refers to how many years of experience the trainee has with a given activity. A post-college athlete, bikini competitor, CrossFitter, they can likely handle a higher volume and intensity of training than someone who has played sports but rarely lifted weights. And this differs from person to person, obviously. Bioindividuality has to be considered. So it's something that needs to be considered when programming. Again, I could have two athletes. Listen, I could have two athletes doing the same 4 exercises in one day. So in a workout, they're doing the same 4 exercises, but at completely different set and rep schemes, as well as different tempos and rest periods, which makes those completely different programs, right? Keep it simple, my friends, and use the science of physiology, progressive overload, and adaptation to create your programs. I think people are afraid or think that keeping stuff simple doesn't make you an expert or doesn't make your programming, you know, fancy enough or good enough or enticing enough. And that is all BS. The experts can keep programming simple while still yielding the highest level of results. That is what makes programming good. And I'll give you some of my favorite set and rep schemes now, because I do want to go into that a little bit. The goal of most of my clients is to improve movement patterns, increase muscle and strength and mobility. Okay, so often I use set and rep schemes for the main lift in the range from 8 to two. So 8 sets of two. That would be strength and power, like near maximal strength. And for someone like that, mind you, this is where programming is so simple, but I guess complex at the same time. I just said it's 8 to 2, but is it 8 to 2 all at 90% of their 1 RM? Is it 8 times 2 upping the weight every 2 sets? You know, so don't just think, oh, okay, I just tell them to do 8 by 2. Okay, well, there's other things we have to consider there. Like, what is the rest period in those? If it is maximal strength, they're going to need 2 to 3 minutes of rest in between sets in order to come back and successfully lift that near maximal load, right? So anyway, that might be a little bit too advanced or too deep into it, but the range that I'll use for people who are trying to get strong, and depending on their training age and all of those things, the main lift will be 8 to 2 up to 4 to 8, so 4 sets of 8. Now, that's a big difference in total volume, right? For their main lift, the 8 to 2 is 16 total reps. And the 4 to 8, 4 times 8, is 32. So literally double the reps they're completing. So in cases where the main lift is low volume, which I consider in my programs, a low volume main lift is 16 reps and under, then their accessory work will be higher volume so that we're still going after that muscle growth, that hypertrophy, and that strength gain towards their main lift or whatever their goal is. So accessory work will include reps 8 to 12 almost always at 3 to 5 sets with the occasional 15 to 20 reps for a burnout. But with a client that's working a movement pattern, so working to improve a movement pattern, correct improper movement patterns like the squat or bench press, they will have a higher volume in their main lift. And even up to 5 to 10 reps, or 5 times 10 reps, so 5 sets of 10. That's very high volume for a main lift. That alone will likely yield hypertrophy, which is muscle growth, especially because the tempo will be slower down than up on literally almost every lift I have my clients do. It is a tempo that is slower down than up, or they're squeezing at the top or the bottom for 2 seconds. So not only is the volume high here in that 5 times 10 rep scheme, but so is the time under tension because of the tempo that I'm likely having them follow, especially if they're reworking a movement pattern. We're going to slow that movement pattern down. They're likely going to have a 3 second down, 2 second up, depending on if we're working on the eccentric or the concentric phase. So 5 times 10 plus a slow tempo, that's a lot of stress for the body. So with this type of workout, they will either have less accessory work to begin with. Like, they might have only 2 pieces of accessory work over after that, or they'll have lower volume accessory work. So I might still have 6 exercises, but it's going to be at a lower volume. High volume compound lifts can also fry your nervous system, and I want my clients to recover quickly. So if you have a client doing this, doing high volume main lift, so your client is under a load in a compound position doing high volume, and they have a high time under tension, that can fry their nervous system. So make sure that you're giving them 72 hours at least before they have to work that muscle group again, right? We want to give them adequate time to recover from that damage. Okay. Programming can feel like a beast, my friends. I hope this didn't just confuse you more. I honestly, like I said, find it hard to break it down into digestible pieces, but I tried really hard for you. Remember your skeleton, that you have your warm-up, your movement prep, your power, if that's a component, and then your strength compound lift, compound accessory work, which is just multi-joint, and then you have next down in the line is your single joint accessory, because that has a much lower metabolic demand, lower central nervous system demand, and then you can have a cool down mobility or cardio. Again, that is not a one size fits all, you guys. I'm just giving you something to start with so that you don't have to look at this whole world of possibilities and try to choose something. And then for your exercise selection, remember your categories. You've got knee dominant exercises, hip dominant exercises, pushes and pulls. Within pushes and pulls, you have horizontal and vertical. And then you have carries that need to be included at least once a week, and core work as well, which can go at the beginning of your program or the end of your programming. And that needs to progress from anti-rotational to rotational. If you missed the last podcast episode, this is a part two to how to be good at programming. The previous episode laid out the foundations for this one, and I think that if you don't understand what I went over in the previous episode, you will never reach the level of programming that I think you really want to. Also, episode 11, I believe, actually goes over the five basics of training and programming, and that's what I believe the trainer and the trainee should have an understanding of. So make sure to check those episodes out if you haven't, for sure. Like I said, I do really hope that this was helpful to you trainers out there. Practice, 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 and focus on grasping and mastering the basics. It's an art, and more coaches need to master it, in my opinion. If you like this episode or if you value what you find here, please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. It means the world to me. For real, that's all I've got, friends. Until next time, I am Annie Miller, and thank you for listening to the FitsPro Podcast.